Welcome to the KP Podcast, where we talk about the business of real estate. A podcast about leveraging opportunities, growing your business, and experiencing financial freedom. Here are your hosts, Keith Anderson and Peter Kamboukos.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the KP Podcast. I'm Pete. I'm flying solo today. Keith is not going to be with us, but we have got a very special guest with us today. Let's welcome to the podcast, Mr. Pete Reese. Pete, how are you?
I'm doing great, Pete. Well, thanks for having me.
we appreciate it. And Pete's got an interesting story, and we like to bring you guys, when we bring these interviews, you know, sometimes you don't want to hear about just us and what Keith and I are doing. So we like to bring on some other people, give you guys some different perspectives, learn about some other folks doing things in the industry. And Pete's got an interesting background here in the investment space, specifically in land. And we'll ask him and get into that here in just a minute. But Pete, if you would, for you know, our folks, our audience here that are not familiar with you, tell us a little bit about yourself. Kind of where are you now? How did you get started in this business? And kind of what are you up to there a little bit, so they get a little bit of your background?
Sure. Well, my background in real estate has been for quite some time now. I started in the early 2000s flipping homes, you know, as an investor, just buying properties and fixing them up a little bit and then reselling them. It started kind of fixing them up, you know, doing a lot of the work myself, then brought on contractors and things to help me with the work. And we were kind of scaling that business up. And then the market crashed in about 2007 here in Southern California and in most places around the country. But thankfully, prior to that, a little bit, I had gotten my broker's license out here pretty much just so I could show myself properties, because I was getting all my deals off the MLS. And I was, I figured if I could get my broker's license, I could show myself the properties and just get, you know, on those deals a little bit quicker. Sure. But the broker license came in handy, because when the market crashed, I was like, okay, what to do now? Flipping homes isn't really the best thing because there weren't many buyers. So I decided to just focus on listing bank-owned properties. So for a number of years there, I was just focused as an REO listing broker, and did a lot of business, and was thankful that I was actually doing business during that severe market downturn.
For sure.
So that kind of led me on a path to working with a lot of other investment companies, large investment companies, and I was finding them deals and just bringing them, you know, deals on the buyer side of the transactions. Then I got out of real estate kind of all together for a little while, and worked on a business with my wife doing, she's had a blog and a travel blog for quite some time. And we started a whole company, an online education business around that, showing people how to start blogs and travel blogs. And we were traveling the world about 150 days out of the year with a family of five.
Wow.
So that was a great chapter in our life and very exciting. And the business was great and successful and everything. But I really had this itch to get back into real estate. Didn't really know what form, other than I wanted to be on the investor side. So I was researching some things online, kind of stumbled into some stuff about land flipping. People talking about, hey, I bought this property for $10,000 and I sold it for $30,000. I thought, well, that's pretty good. If I could triple my money on every one of these deals, I'd be happy. But there really wasn't that much information. I ended up buying a training program on it, kind of went all in on it, and then ended up buying our first properties in 2021, resold our first one in March of 2021. And that first year, we did about $1.2 million and some change in revenue, about 50% gross profit. So on average, we were trying to buy a property and double our money. So after all commissions and closing costs. Then in 2022, we ended up doing almost $3.5 million in revenue and a little bit shy of 50% gross profit, but pretty close. And 2023, we want to do $10 million. So we're trying to scale this business as much as we can. So that's our primary focus, land flipping right now.
Yeah. No, I love it. I love that you're going for the triple in 2023 roundabout.
Yeah. Just keep tripling.
Yeah. So tell me about, so now you're in the land flipping, but like you said, you know, that's not how you got started. And, you know, you're one of those folks, myself included, who went through that downturn. And as you know, in this real estate industry right now, we've got a lot of newer folks. And so, you know, there is a handful of us, a decent amount, that went through that downturn. Some folks have never seen it. And so I guess, can you talk a little bit about, you know, what did that look like? I guess, what were some of the benefits or drawbacks when you were flipping those properties, and what kind of led you towards that land side of things that you're doing now?
Yeah, so it was a crazy time. You know, I hear a lot of people talking about, hey, I can't wait till the market crashes because I'm going to buy up all these deals and everything.
You don't know what you're asking for, right?
I know. Yeah, exactly. I don't think they realize what the whole big picture is. I mean, it was a crazy time. I mean, restaurants empty, real estate trickles down to everything. So it started with real estate, but it really trickled down to the whole economy, and lots of people were suffering. I mean, Absolutely. As an REO listing broker, I had to, you know, the first thing is I'd get an assignment from one of these banks, an email. First thing I had to do is go out to these properties and do an occupancy check, you know, like, are there people still living there? And then if there are, you know, sometimes they didn't even really know that their home went through the foreclosure process. I guess I'm getting off on a tangent, but it was kind of a crazy time that I don't want to revisit. But you know, it was interesting, and you know, hopefully that type of market crash doesn't happen again. You know, obviously we've had some softening this year and everything.
Right.
That was like a fall off the cliff type of monumental crash. Who knows whatever is going to happen in the future, but I don't see it happening like that again, unless there's some sort of big world events that kind of take that, make that happen.
But, yeah. And I agree with you, you know, right now, as far as, what we're looking at. So it's interesting to hear your perspective about what you were seeing then too, because, you know, you've got a lot of people, like I said, who didn't go through it. And so we do see a lot of that, you know, fear and things, not only in the marketplace, but you've got, you know, people putting this stuff out on YouTube and other places who frankly, you know, don't really realize that there's different dynamics. And so, you know, one of those things we're always trying to point out on our side is, yeah, guys, real estate doesn't always go up, but we can't just look at what happened in 2008 and then say that's what's going to happen again, because literally we've got so many different things now. Lending regulations that came out of that, and, you know, no vacancies and undersupplies and things that affect the market. And so, but yeah, not to go too far off on that tangent, but it's interesting to hear someone else's perspective. So you're dealing, like you said, fixing those up. You're doing them yourself. You've had to go there. Some of these folks didn't even know, you know, what was going on, that their house was foreclosed on. And so, you know, you got out, and traveling the world with a family of five, you know, before you got into this, back into real estate here. And I want to touch on that land in a second, but man, you know, I've got four children myself, and I know how hectic that could be. And for us, you know, we'll leave the youngest ones at home because we're just like, guys, this is too much. So 150 days a year, and I did see on your website, I mean, you guys were going all over the world. Like, it seemed like you in Europe and other places. And so how did you manage that? Were you guys just working remotely, you know, on that business with the kids? How did you handle school, you know, briefly? Because I think a lot of people, like, you know, yes, we turned into the real estate thing, but when I hear something like that, you know, there are goals and dreams that we all aspire to. And so we want to hear a little bit about, how did you guys manage that?
Well, it was certainly a fun time and an experience that probably never be able to recreate in any way, but It was interesting. You know, my kids are a little bit older, even at that time. You know, that was probably, that the time period was probably about 2015 through 2020 when COVID hit, where we were really traveling heavy duty. And, you know, my kids now are 22, 20, and 13. So, you know, they were a few years less than that. But so even the 13-year-old, you know, after a few trips, she was very well trained, and she knew, you know, she knew exactly where to go in the airport. She knew the whole process, you know, systematizing everything, I guess, is the way to do it.
Yeah.
And obviously she was younger, so she had her moments where things were a little bit more difficult. But we realized that giving her ice cream was the key to keeping her happy. So
that's always the trick.
So, but, you know, that was a really cool time. I mean, obviously we had to work remote with our business, and just kind of figured out how to do it. You know, each spot or hotel room we were at, just kind of dedicated a time block in the mornings to getting work done, and the rest of the time was out going doing fun stuff and kind of experiencing wherever we were at. So kind of the, some of the craziest trips we did were, we did a trip to Europe in maybe 2019, but basically it was 6 weeks in Europe, or I believe it was 6 weeks in Europe to a bunch of different cities. We'd spend like 4 or 5 days in each city, so we kind of felt like we understood it a little bit. Yeah. And then we took a transatlantic cruise back from England to New York.
Oh, wow.
And then spent a few days in New York and then came back. So that was altogether, that was about 2 months trip. And then after that, we were all like, I don't know how much more we could do. It was awesome. It was amazing.
Yeah.
But just takes its toll on you a little bit. You know?
Yeah. That's a lot at that point, huh? But that's cool. Yeah. That seems like that's a unique experience that I'm sure the kids will never forget. So, there you go, guys out there. This is definitely something to strive for. That's pretty cool. Most people
these days of technology, I mean, you could do it. You could work from anywhere in the world. And if you don't, as far as the schooling goes, we did, my older two were, a lot of the time they were either in online classes, online school, or kind of taking college classes, online as well.
Yeah.
And my younger one, she did online school, and she still does a lot of mostly online school. She has a couple days a week where she goes and meets with other kids and we do other things like that. But, the world's changed. I mean, there's options these days.
Yeah, absolutely. And we see that even as we, talk about with the real estate, and we saw through the pandemic, and we saw the big work from home movement. And even now, when, we have employers that are asking people to come back to the office, it's still largely partly that hybrid model, or, at the very least, we've still got a lot of work from home, a lot more than we did before. Even so, even though part of them are going back, there's still a bigger number. And I agree with you that that's definitely got people thinking about, their other options and not just being stuck to one place. And so that's good to hear. That's good to hear the perspective on it. So let's talk about then that timeline. So you guys, after that 2 month trip, you come back, California, right? Is this home base for you?
Yeah. San Diego. Yeah.
Okay. San Diego. And now you come back, and is this about the time now that you start looking at the land flipping and the land deals at that point? And is this when RealVest comes into play?
It's sort of, I think that was kind of the summer before like the COVID thing happened. So, I was at that point after that trip, we loved it and everything, but I had it in that in my head, at least, that I was like, I kind of really would love to get back into real estate at some point. And then when COVID hit and everything, obviously our selling a training program on travel blogging wasn't the best fit at that point.
Yeah.
So we're going to just stop that, like even promoting it or anything like that. And then that's when we really started to look into the other investment models, and then the land flipping is when that came up. So, we officially started the company at the end of 2020, but didn't do any business until the beginning of 2021.
Okay, and so tell us about that first land deal. How did you get into it? What did that one look like? Was it a swing and a miss or a home run on the first shot?
I wouldn't say it's a home run, but it's maybe a double.
Okay.
So almost a double.
The first try. Not bad.
Yeah. The first deal, and we had purchased actually a few properties, but this was the first one to sell. This was actually the first one we bought as well. So that worked out well. But it was up in Washington State. It was in a little gated community, kind of a recreational gated lake community. And we ended up buying the property for about $17,000 cash. And put it on the market with a local agent there. I know this is kind of a smaller dollar property, but I think we listed it for $39,900, and within a few days had a cash offer, someone that wanted to buy it for $35,000. So after commissions and everything, I think we netted about $13,000 on a $17,000 purchase. So I figured that was a great first deal, and it only took about a holding time of a little over 30 days or something like that. So.
That's pretty
happy with that, and I kind of got the bug. I was like, well, if I could repeat this over and over and over again, that things could really accelerate pretty quickly. Because anytime you're, on average, if you're doubling your money every 60 days, it really starts to accelerate.
Yeah, I could imagine. So let me dive in just a little bit more on that one. So how did you guys find that property now? So were you sending out some mailers? Were you making some phone calls? Was it listed, or how did that come about?
Yeah, we generate all of our business with direct mail.
Okay.
And direct mail, we kind of have a really specific way of doing it. We'll actually send out an offer amount to all these properties. Mm. Generally build a list on something. We have a service that we use called DataTree. It's a First American company.
Okay.
So we'll identify certain areas. We'll pull a list, basic criteria, you know, raw land in this particular area, you know, between, you know, 5 acres and 50 acres or, you know, something like that. And then we'll just take averages for that particular area. We'll kind of look at the comps and see what the average retail values are. We'll offer them quite a bit lower than retail value. So then we can, you know, buy at an aggressive price, hopefully. So it allows us to list it at a really an attractive price so we can sell it quickly.
Okay.
But yeah, so we send out actual offers to people, and sometimes they sign it and send it back, mail it back to us. and, you know, sometimes they call us up and say, you know, you're a bastard for sending me such a low offer.
Like, hey, at least I sent you an offer, right?
Yeah, that's right. At least we get the conversation started.
Yeah,
You know, sometimes we're off on our price, and sometimes we're too high, too low, whatever the case may be. But at least it gets a conversation started, and we look into it deeply at that point and see what kind of deal we can work out.
Yeah, and then is that still today? Typically, then once you acquire, are you still listing with a local agent, or are you taking that in house at this point?
Yeah, that's definitely part of our system. I'm a broker, so obviously I know what to do, and I could probably find a flat fee MLS in these areas. But I would much rather work with a local broker that knows the area. You know, a lot of times these local land brokers have a buyer's list already, and they've got their marketing down, and also they help us on the acquisition side. We run it by them when we're buying a property. We're like, hey, this is what we're buying. This is what we're buying it for. What do you think you could resell it for? So it just gives us an extra layer of comfort when we're purchasing a property, but definitely part of our system. And, you know, we pay our brokers 10% on all these deals. Oh, wow. We want to make it a win-win and kind of bring them into the team. And when we find a really good one in a particular area, we try to do as much marketing as we can in that particular area to do this repeat business.
Yeah, that's good to hear. And you've kind of got that formula, like you said, where, you know, too many times in this industry, people just look at that one transaction. But like you said, if you treat people well, pay people, it's like, hey guys, this can keep repeating and be a win-win for both sides if we keep doing more business. So that's pretty cool.
That's the whole way to look at it. As far as I'm concerned, you know, like it's got to make sense for both sides. Right. I mean, I try to look at it through someone else's perspective and think, well, you know, do I want this person as a client that, you know, always is beating me up over commission
and nickel and dime,
and you know, I just don't want to be like their best client, you know, someone that they want to pick up the phone for.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes sense. That's how you're going to get those best deals too. Yeah. So, and then on these, so are you flipping all of them, or are you doing any development? Are you doing any work on some of these? Do you keep some of them?
Yeah. Sometimes we do some minor value add stuff. Like we'll do clearing to access the property, or maybe we'll do a survey, or maybe we'll do a perk test, you know, something along those lines. In a couple of situations, we have done some initial steps on development. We've also done some minor subdivisions. Some of the areas are really easy to subdivide the properties. For instance, we just did one of the 75-acre property. We split it up into 5 lots and then sold all the lots off individually.
Okay.
You know, some areas it's more restrictive. Like if I were to try to do that here in California, it would take forever. But you know, some of these areas you just hire a surveyor and they go out and then they submit it to the county. It's done.
Yeah.
You know? So
yeah, we love it here in Arizona, especially because we do some business in California as well, and it's night and day with some of these different areas for sure.
Yeah. Really.
So, okay, and as far as, you know, when you're selling them off, so whether you're doing the value add or just relisting them, Are you guys just straight selling them every time? Do you do any sort of creative stuff with them? Do you do any seller financing type of situations with them? Do you have anything else, or is it just, hey, let's try to flip this one and see what else we can find?
Most of the time, it's really a quick flip situation. That's our preference, because it's all about the math, really, and keeping the money moving. Yeah. We're buying all these properties with our own cash. There are ways in this business where you can actually bring on a partner to actually put up the cash, and then you split the deal with them. And I have done that on a couple of the larger deals that we've done.
Okay.
But for the most part, I'm just trying to keep my money moving as quickly as possible. And at the end of the day, even if I'm not getting top dollar on a property, it works out much better in the long run to just move it faster. I don't hold the notes on any of these deals, but I did recently start working with someone that will buy. Like, if I offer, owner financing to the buyer, then they'll buy the note for me at closing. But I have to take a discount on that. So it doesn't make sense in every situation, but sometimes, it's an extra tool in the toolbox.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Yeah. Just turn more deals and help hit those goals. So now you're working with a note buyer on some of them. Okay. All right. So what are you seeing now, coming out of the pandemic, and into a market, like you said, we saw it soften for sure in the second half of 22, and 23 is certainly on the residential side picked up a little bit here at the beginning of the year. What does it look like in your world there on the land side? What changes have you seen in the last 6 to 9 months, and what's it looking like here in 2023?
So far, so good. Knock on wood. I haven't really noticed a big change in where they are now as compared to where they were. I think the land market is a little different than just, the residential side of things. I mean, I know a lot of these rural areas that we work in, they didn't run up as much as some of the, the residential, markets.
Yeah.
So thankfully, I don't think they're going to go down, as much as some of the residential stuff either.
And Pete, let me ask you there, when you're buying them, do you guys tend to stick to those more rural areas, or do you do infill lots inside the cities? Is that, kind of more opportunistic, or do you have a preference there?
We mostly stick to the rural side of things, 5 to 10 acres plus, but I will do infill lots here and there. Deals come by, but we don't actively, market them. We don't send out our marketing to those specific areas. It's a whole nother game. There are investors that only focus on those infill lots.
Sure.
We kind of have gravitated towards the rural side of things. It's a little easier for us. I just find it easier.
Yeah. But. Well, and you probably have a little less competition there too, which is great,
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's good. So like you said, in your particular areas, then you haven't seen it take a little bit of a dip. And have you seen either an uptick or a pullback in the activity? I wonder, like you said, because residential is different than the land market. And so I'm wondering if it's kind of reacting in a similar fashion.
The activity has been pretty constant. The one thing I noticed, maybe a couple more deals, a higher percentage of deals fall out. I haven't really analyzed that, but it just seems like, we get that. But it always seems like we get a replacement buyer pretty quickly. Okay. So maybe some people are listening to the news and getting spooked out or something like that. I think that happens. But the other thing with the land is that I think that land can kind of directly benefit from the inflationary environment we've got going on now. It's like a real asset, and it's not as tied to interest rates as much either, because most of the deals are cash. So, I think the fact that the land is just like that ultimate like asset that, should benefit from inflation over time is kind of helping the land market right now.
Very cool. Yeah. You own your own piece of dirt, right?
That's right. They're not going anywhere, not making any more of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let me ask you now, when you were flipping homes back in the day, and like you said, you've had you're in there doing the work and you're dealing with people. And you don't have any of that stuff on the land side. There might be some structures, but generally you don't have structures on there or people living there. But what kind of challenges do you run into here on the land side? Do you have, different things that maybe people aren't used to hearing about when you're dealing with that side of things?
Well, it's infinitely easier than flipping homes, I think. I've done both, and flipping homes is difficult, yeah. logistically difficult. You're dealing with a lot more people, contractors. Mm-hmm. It's just tougher.
You're managing people and materials and yes. all kinds of things.
And a lot of unknowns that you don't know. But the land side, issues come up from time to time. You know, just a couple, well, just an example. We recently bought a property and put it on the market to resell it. And got a buyer right away. While we're under contract, got a letter from some other attorney representing one of the neighbors saying, oh, it's located on a dirt road. And they were claiming that we don't have like legal access to get through on this dirt road to our property. Obviously, we checked that out before we purchased the property and we got title insurance and we knew that we had legal access, but they're putting up a claim that we don't. So I had to hire my own attorney to research it and send them a letter back. And, you know, it's almost resolved, but, you know, those types of things come up.
Yeah.
But they're generally pretty, pretty straightforward. And, thankfully I haven't lost money on any deals yet.
Oh, wow. That's impressive.
I've been pretty close. You know, there's a couple of deals where I made like 100 or 500 bucks, which is not a win by any means.
Right. But, at least you're in the positive now.
And that's right. Yeah, that's it. But I did like 120 deals so far. And, so I know I'm going to make a mistake at some point. I'm going to buy a property that is going to be a loser or something. Yeah. So it happens, but you can kind of figure out a lot of that stuff while you're under contract to purchase a property.
Yeah.
If you're going down the checklist and making all the calls you're supposed to.
Sure. Yeah. Well, that makes sense. And yeah, like you say, if you just do enough deals, you're going to run into one that doesn't work out, but that's great to hear.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you guys are all over the country then. Is there are certain areas you're avoiding or sticking primarily to?
Well, I haven't done a lot in California. I did one deal, I think, in California. Okay. So it's, I'm not that I'm avoiding it. It's just a little bit more difficult.
Yeah.
Most of our stuff is on the East Coast right now. We seem to kind of fall in a groove where we're doing a lot there. But this year I want to really expand into a lot of different areas. And kind of that expansion really comes down to who we can find locally to work with and rely on and kind of help us out with the valuations. A local broker helps out tremendously. But,
very cool. Yeah.
Well, looking to expand anywhere. I'm not opposed to any states or anything like that.
Very cool. And right now, are you guys, is it mainly you and your wife there that are running it, or are you working with any other, you know, partners or students or anything like that that you've got?
I've got a large team built up at this point. Well, I've got eight people on my team, and we all have different roles. Like I have a lead manager that inputs all the leads in the CRM. I've got a call center that is kind of the first line that we outsource with, and then they answer all the calls 24 hours a day. And then I've got the lead manager that inputs stuff into our system. I've got an acquisition manager that talks with all the sellers and communicates with them. I've got a property analyst that analyzes all the deals, transaction manager, an assistant, and a lot of different due diligence manager. So a lot of different people that kind of doing individual tasks to, you know, make it all work together as a machine. I'm basically trying to replace myself and just kind of be the one that kind of drives the business forward and approves the deals and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's the goal, right? That's what we talk about on this show is how can I keep replacing myself? And
you know,
ultimately, it'll help your whole team and your whole business if you're doing more and you're focused on what you're doing there. So, well, perfect. I've got one more question for you people before we get into that one now. You said you're looking to expand everywhere. If we've got folks listening that want to see if they can work with you, maybe they, you know, work with some land broker in a certain area, or they work in that field, what's the best way for them to get in contact with you?
Yeah, definitely. Best way to reach out to me would be to go on my website, turningprofit.com. Okay. So I have the Real Vest is our kind of outward facing, you know, site for, you know, property owners and property sellers when they get mail and they go to that website and check us out and make sure we're legitimate, you know. And then I've got another side of things, which is Turning Profit. And that's the breaking down the land flipping business itself. I don't have any training programs to sell or anything like that. But at this point, I'm just kind of putting up as much information out there as I can about the business. And each month I do a monthly income report where I kind of break down the revenue we took in, the profit we took in, each and every deal that we did, like what we bought it for, what we sold it for, profit we made, days we held it for, and some notes about that property. So working on being as transparent as possible. And that's kind of my inside project right now.
Perfect.
So
turningprofit.com.
If there's any brokers or agents out there that want to work together, I would love it. So definitely go on that website, and you'll find my email address there and stuff. So.
Okay. And we will link to it as well. So turningprofit.com. And awesome. We appreciate that transparency, like you said, and kind of showing what's out there and you know, that you're a real person and this is what you're doing and how to get a hold of you. So, we need more of that in the industry. So really appreciate that. So for anyone listening out there, again, we will link to that. And so, Pete, I do appreciate you, you know, kind of going through and telling us kind of where you're coming from and what this land flipping looks like. And like I said, we'll put that info out there. But I've got one last question for you. Tell us about this goal, this long-term goal we've heard about owning an island. So what's the deal with that?
Since I was a kid, I always thought that would be the coolest thing ever. You know, maybe it's because I read a book about Richard Branson or something, but I thought it would be great to have my own, you know, like Caribbean island, not some island somewhere where it's cold and windy and, you know, the Aleutian Islands or something. No, something Caribbean, something warm, you know, tropical someday. You know, maybe I should send out some letters to island owners or something.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you're in the land business, right? You see if you can find one that's just a really big piece of land technically. Yeah. But who knows, maybe you'll be neighbors with Richard Branson down there one day.
One day maybe.
That's super cool though. That's cool to have a big awesome dream like that. We love it. Well, that's awesome, Matt. So thank you for joining us today, Pete. Like I said, everybody, hopefully you guys learn something from Pete and the land stuff that he's doing. We will definitely, like I said, put his info there and link to the website. And if you guys have any questions for us, remember it's questions@kpeliteaz.com. Follow us on all the socials. We're the KP Elite. And Pete, it was great talking to you, man. We appreciate your time today. And thanks for being with us.
I appreciate it.
Thanks guys.